after a season of record-breaking performances and historic moments. This Bucks team is postseason ready, led by a dynamic group of players who have redefined the game. It's officially Fear the Deer season. Help defend home court and join the best fans in the league at Fiserv Forum for the Bucks playoffs, presented by BMO. Don't miss the chance to experience the intensity and excitement firsthand. For more information and to purchase tickets, visit bucks.com/playoffs. That's bucks.com/playoffs.
You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, it's the captain of this vessel, Marcus Johnson, with his son, first mate, Chris Johnson. I am the captain of this vessel on this fantastic voyage. Do you want to go with us? Of course you do. Man, this thing has been one crazy, tumultuous ride, but it has been fun. How you doing today, Chris? Stani Loco, what's up, man?
Man, I'm doing wonderful, man. It's finally getting warm out here in Los Angeles, so things are actually looking up.
Okay. Yeah, and it's getting warm with these Milwaukee Bucks. I got to give credit to the good doctor. The good doctor's in the lab. The good doctor's trying to figure out how can I, we don't need to overhaul. We got Giannis, we got Chris, we got Dame, you know, but how can I tweak? How can I lay tweak? How can I lay tweak tweak?
Yes.
Is this lineup so that it will give us just a little bit more you know, what can I do? And so what did Doc do? He chose my boy Patrick Beverly to be the energizer. He started him instead of Malik Beasley. Now, you know, hopefully Bees can deal with that psychologically. He's already been shooting the ball and struggling just a bit. He's had a great season. Yes. So I want to see him continue to realize that he's a big part of the success of this team. Up until now and going forward. But I'm telling you, man, that substitution of Patrick Beverly just changed the dynamic. It changed the look, right? I mean, you're a ball player. You know, when you get that little energizer guy in there, it can do wonders for your whole overview as a basketball team.
But it's also one of those things where you really got to give Doc a lot of credit, because Pat Bev's energy and how he's been hooping, it went through a tough stretch as far as the effect and the value it had to the Bucks lineup, right? And so for him to be this guy that you've been talking about, how much you loved his energy, you've been saying this for weeks, but everyone kind of said the consensus was, hey, we might need to move on from Pat Bev. He can't play more than 10 to 15 minutes a game, you know, in crunch, in major situations, meaningful minutes, et cetera. But now we see that he can. That the veteran stuff, the veteran thing, the Pat Bev, Arkansas, Chicago, energy, whatever, that stuff is legit.
Marshall High School.
And it's working.
Arthur Agee, the 38 points a game in high school, Pat Bev. I mean,
please.
And I meant to look it up before we hit the air, but his three-point shooting is actually really, really solid, and it's been solid throughout his career. You forget that. You think of him as a non-shooter. You know what I mean? I just automatically file him away in that non-shooter section. But he's actually consistently been up in the upper 30s, you know, always 37-38% from the three-point line. And you forget about that because his defense and his nuisance factor is so off the hook.
He's so engaged. And I think that type of engagement just rubs off. I mean, it inspires and motivates everybody else to be locked in. I mean, you're watching the defensive effort. You just see an uptick in energy and awareness. You know, guys are now, you know, going the extra mile for the closeout. They're talking a little bit louder than they had been. They couldn't have figured this out at a better time.
Yeah. And the other thing that Doc talked about, which was, you know, one of the sidebars that was actually a brilliant kind of contribution. I'm looking at Patrick Beverly's 3-point field goal percentage for his career. He's played a lot of years. He's 35 years old, man. Patrick Beverly, Chris, is shooting 37% this year, but he's shot, you know, he had some struggling years.
Let's be realistic. 40- but
He shot 37% for his career. He shot 30, so his whole body of work.
But yeah, I'm saying, but that number, like, you know, let's talk about that number, 37. That's considered a pretty solid number nowadays. Right. Like, I've noticed that, like, you know, we're thinking 40. I don't know if we come from the era of where 40 was the number. That was the, you know, where we thought a guy was really a solid shooter. But now I see people talking about it, 35, 37, and they're okay with that. I don't, you know, I mean, I'll take it too.
But he has been over 40% twice. Almost, like, might as well say four times. He's been like 39.7, 38.8. You know, so he's had some really, really solid shooting years. And then the thing Doc talked about, you got this other ball handler, this other playmaker on the floor. And when you think about Malik Beasley's game, that's not the strength of his game. And even though Beasley can put it on the floor two or three dribbles and get into his floater, his floater game.
It's different. You know, Pat Bev, it's different when you got to create.
It's different. And then when you've got a guy in a Pat Bev who's got a point guard mentality. Quickly, so now Giannis and the injury that he sustained, we thank our heavenly stars that, you know, that was because, you see how it happens. The first thing that brings your mind is Achilles, and season's over.
Right.
But we just thank that, and thank God that it's a soleus, a calf strain, and you know, he's going to shut it down for the remainder of the season. But hey, I want to give Giannis his flowers right now. First player in NBA history to average 30 points a game at least and shoot over 60% from the field, which is remarkable. And so give Giannis, give Giannis that shout out. Yes, sir.
And what makes it so impressive? Like, is it like, why is 30 a game at 60% so impressive in today's NBA?
Well, it's impressive because nobody's ever done it. I mean, you look at the guys. Wilt never did it. You know, you would think Wilt, and back in the early '60s when he's averaging 50s and 40s, and that you know,
Wilt was taking jumpers. Wilt was a jump shooter. Well, but Wilt was a jump. Wilt was major jumpers. You know that. Yeah. Wilt was major jumpers.
But he was overpowering guys. Sure. With Shaq. Shaq never did it. Shaq has always been around 29.6, almost 30 points.
That's surprising.
Yeah, that Shaq never did it. You know what I mean? I even looked up David Robinson. I know he averaged over 30 or so one time, and he was in the low 50s, but he was more of a jump shooter too. So the fact that nobody's ever done it means that Giannis is he's traversed into uncharted territories once again, and we've got to give him major credit. And we're thankful that he'll be around and hopefully recover from what he went through. You know, and I posted this on Twitter. He and Drew Holiday got into a little teet-a-teet under the basket, pushing and what, and Drew actually shoved him down from the back awkwardly, and all the brunt of that weight was on that leg that was injured. I think it was the left leg, but he came down on that left leg really hard, and so I just, you know, it just didn't sit right with me, especially when he goes down later in the game. But that's neither here nor there. I'm just, you know, I just remembered that I fouled that away because that was an aggressive play between the two of them. So if we do meet again, and hopefully we will see the Celtics again later on down the line, that's just something to think about. So anyway, man, that's where we are with the Bucks right now. Glad to see them get out of their funk. A part of this fantastic voyage. I'm the captain of this vessel, first mate, my son Chris, only father and son tandem to win a national championship at the same school, UCLA, 1995-1975.
Go Bruins.
Next, man. We've got a great guest, a guy that I really respect, and can't wait to get him on here and just talk all things Milwaukee Bucks team president, Peter Fagan. We'll be right back at you with the Presidente.
The Milwaukee Bucks are postseason ready. Don't miss out on the action. Secure your single game tickets for the Bucks playoffs presented by Vimo now at bucks.com/playoffs.
All right. Welcome back. The Fantastic Voyage here. The Here District is the name of this podcast. And, man, we are so honored to have El Presidente.
Hey. There you go. A bilingual broadcast.
Yeah, but Peter, man, welcome to the Here District. And, look, it's been – man, it's been one heck of a year. I call this the Fantastic Voyage for a lot of reasons, but it's just been this incredible journey this season with so much going on. How has it been for you as the president of the team, the guy that got his hands in pretty much everything that goes on with this basketball organization?
Yeah, I think it's been like no other year. I think the the good thing, and I'm sure we'll get into kind of what happens when you have a new coach, you dismiss a coach, you hire another coach, you kind of plagued with some injuries. I mean, the fun thing about this world is like that's what this job is kind of how do you handle, through adversity, kind of be solution oriented and figure out like how at the end of the day do you get this team and this organization in the best possible spot. So, and again, it's like, I think John Horst and I were in the exam room when they were examining Giannis, and we looked at each other and said, like, we got to figure this out, and that's kind of how we go about everything with as positive, constructive an attitude as we can. And knowing that we're going to have big holes to jump over.
And listen, I want to get into more of that, but first, just more about you, because you've got this passion for the game. What's your background basketball wise? You played in high school. You played.
Yeah, so I am one of the greatest talented players that have no athletic ability at all. So, high school, competitive high school, you want me? Division III basketball, I'm your guy. But besides that, like beyond the passion. And just always loved it. Kind of one of my first jobs was at Madison Square Garden, where I ended up, working for the Knicks and kind of running marketing for a big portion of the Garden. And I could have told you, like, in my mid-20s, I could have died and been happy, man. That was like, I loved the association. I loved, like, the sport. Kind of, I remember, kind of everything from being in the office next to Willis Reed to watching games as part of my job. I didn't think it was reality. And luckily, like, I feel the same exact way. And I know your son won't say it, but when you and I talked and got you to come here from your Pac-12 days and wanted you to change the landscape of Bucks basketball, felt the same way. It's like, what are these incredible chapters that we're able to do?
Yeah, no, that's good stuff, man. And so you played D3. What college was that? Where'd you play it?
Well, you got it, Chris Finch. We are the two most successful NBAers. Him as a player at Franklin and Marshall. Me as a non-player, I would say. But this small little school in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. At some point, we always laugh with each other, saying, "Look at us!" Like, and by the way, nobody would have bet us on futures. That's for sure. That at the time. So, like, we always laugh that in our own little world, we're special in our own minds to get done. So I actually, with very little or no success in basketball, I actually had more success in college soccer to play. Wow. So to get it done. But like you guys, like a fanatic, I could absorb, watch, and hit sports day and night, and still the same way.
When I first got here 9-10 years ago, you used to play a lot. You still get out there as much,
or no major injury yet. There's enough bad players to get in. I've got to play every once in a while just to make sure John Horst doesn't bully like all the video guys into BS calls and stuff like that. So yeah, I have a role to play.
So Horst is that kind of guy. Horst is that dude. Okay, all right.
Oh, okay. He's Debo out there.
Horst lets you know he's the GM. That's for sure. Yeah.
Funny, Peter, I played when I used to play with Magic. The Horse sounds like Magic back in the day. Magic would make up fouls on 6 possessions in a row. Ball, my ball, my ball.
All facts.
Ball. No foul, phantom fouls, and then he hit the game winner. Good. Who's next?
Straight cheating.
That sounds like Horse.
But it's good. At least it's authentic. It's unabashed. Like, yeah. No,
absolutely.
You are unapologetic. Yeah.
Yeah. And quickly, and I hope you don't mind, but I want to get into just a little bit of this. You got a twin brother, Daniel.
Yep.
And it's really interesting because, Chris, sometimes we'll be on the road, Charlotte, North Carolina, and I think I see Peter, but then as I walk closer, I was like, no, that's not Peter. And then I realized that it's Daniel. Now, I mean, you guys, spitting image, whatever. But did you guys ever pull any of the Patty Duke pranks of him taking your math test and you taking Spanish test, any stuff like that?
Yeah, we did it once with with a girl, which we thought was hilarious, and the girl did not think it was hilarious. And then we did it academically, where he did much better than I did academically. So we're probably like at a 3-1 taking finals exams for each other. He ended up in academics and is a head of school for a private school in New York City, which is kind of the genesis of how I got this job. Two of the parents actually were owners of the Bucks. When they started to do the acquisition, and that's how I kind of got attached to them.
No, see, that works out, man. And then finally, when Robin Lopez was released, I had this lady who the Revive Youth Foundation. Crystal McClain, she sent me this searing text. How could you guys do that? How could you release Robin? I'm like, why are you so upset about Robin Lopez getting released? And then it dawned on me, she has two twin sons. She's like, because he's a twin. When that situation comes up, I know you got to do what you got to do, but is it more difficult just because you understand the workings of that whole dynamic?
So I'll tell you that's a great question, because a lot of people don't even understand that. And it is a different world, you know, and I always kind of joke that like identical twins, like, you know, we're like higher ground. Like you can't even, you don't know unless you are, and the connection. So when that happened, and, you know, we'll talk about that for a few days. The Lopez's have been in the league for a long time. They've got Motts. They've got an agent that's been there the whole time. And I'm in the room, you know, basically looking at John saying like, oh, we got to call Brooke. And we wouldn't do that in any other, like, we wouldn't do that in, because of the emotional connection, because of the respect. And it's almost like explaining to them that this is like way beyond like releasing like anybody else. Like, Brooke, like, we just, and Brooke is such a pro, but we owe him the explanation, which you would never do like on a roster spot or anything else to do. But yeah, I was so sensitive to that and so real. And by the way, Brooke, Robin, Dan, my brother and I all know each other. We all kind of feel like, you know, what it's like to grow up in that like couple thing. So yeah, that was real. I think the reality of this is a business and kind of where to go, but you know, the emotion of it. And these guys make no mistake, much like my brother and I went to college together and other things, like these aren't happenstance that Robin and Brooke were on the team together. Like they wanted that, like for a reason. It's like a miracle. It's so great that you can actually make that happen. So it was definitely upsetting, you know, to them.
Do you and Daniel talk every day? I just final question. I'm just
every day, multiple times.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Brooke said the same thing about he and Robin. I mean, even if it's just on a text or whatever, but it's like some type of communication pretty much every day. So anyway, I just got this fascination with that, man. I spoke with the Morris twins, Marcus and Markeith, when they were at Kansas, and I asked them who wins one-on-one games. They're like, we don't play one-on-one.
Don't play.
I guess it got too crazy when it was younger, but it was like, it surprised me that they never played against each other.
It's so funny with the twins, you know, with the Morrises, and I talked to them. It's like, you know, we all live in this world where like, you know, different people think, you know, one of them is a bigger jerk than the other one, you know, what's, you know, we always just laugh. Like the brothers don't give a damn. Like they don't think, you know, they only think amongst themselves. Like we all laugh like at the kind of what goes on everybody else's mind. But I will say, like, my brother and I like probably look more alike now than we did, you know, 20 years ago, which is a little weird.
Right. Right. No, you do. Anyway, moving on. Let's talk about you, man. Let's get into – this is your 10th year, if I'm correct, right? You came in 2014.
Yep.
Okay. 10 years in, give me a list of your 5 accomplishments that you – not so much most proud of, but just kind of stand out in your mind as some major kind of milestones that you've done while being here in Milwaukee.
Well, we're making –
it could be more than 5. It could be more than 5.
So my wife doesn't look at me like, say, you've got kids, you know, you're married and, you know, all these things. So, you know, I would say, you know, listen, like, as you know, like winning a championship is unlike anything else. Like you get the chip and it kind of like, it puts you in a different mindset. And until you do it, you don't even realize like how special that has been. And then we've had this like incredible, you know, catalytic group of moments, whether it was opening the arena, whether it was building the district, whether it was, you know, like I'd say, like even this year, you can, you know, we'll look back on it and like the Dame trade. You want to know, like, fun, incredible things? Like, let me tell you, like, we're this small, irreverent, you know, kind of city that wins championships. Nobody in the world thought the Bucks were in the game, you know, to trade for Dame Lillard, you know, to get that done. So, you know, we've been lucky because a lot of, like, unbelievable moments, but really kind of, I would say, winning championship, nothing comes close to that. Opening the arena is, like, you know, is also kind of one of those very personal and professional things where I had never been involved. Like, it was almost like giving birth. You know, I'd never been involved with something from the very beginning and planning to kind of like opening the doors to get that done, which is kind of exciting. And then just kind of the growth of this business, the growth of the district, and the growth of, like, our organization has been, like, you know, kind of one of the things I just pinch myself and most proud of. You know, this it's like so much fun and so rewarding. It's kind of insane.
Peter, I was curious about where you guys are as an organization in petitioning the NBA for an All-Star weekend. That's been something when the NBA announced the restrictions or the requirements for hosting, my first thought was, wait a minute, I've been to Milwaukee and it is off the hook. Milwaukee needs to be the next city. Can you chime in on that and let us know where we're at in that matter?
Yeah, I think we have this baseline. First of all, like the Milwaukee Bucks, our ownership, myself, will not stop, you know, being the squeaky wheel and lobbying for an All-Star game until we get one. I think the league has made a clear direction, like in the short term, to look at large coast cities and kind of destinations and in kind of like where it's going, whether it's L.A. next year and Phoenix the following year. You know, I think we will be in the pecking order. I think the way time has kind of followed in, we've had this cluster of Midwestern All-Star games, you know, as well as kind of with Charlotte mixed in the middle of it. So I think the league is, you know, and probably, you know, I understand the balance. Like when we create these weekends and we want them to be even larger, is how do we create them globally, you know, to get that done? And that does make sense, like with major cities to be that destination. But yeah, I mean, Milwaukee will get an All-Star game. I can't tell you when. And we'll continue to kind of scream from the mountaintops to Adam to make sure we do.
Absolutely. And in terms of, you talked about just the Fiserv, the HERE district. We talked about that. You know, we all go back to 2021 and the championship year. The great thing about that was that it was July. The finals were in July, so the weather was nice, and you get 50,000-60,000, you know, whatever it was out there. Yeah. Now, last year, the team gets beat by Miami. Giannis gets hurt, misses 2.5 games. People leave that out. You know, they always leave that fact out. It was like, oh, 8-1. All right, Giannis didn't play for 2.5 games. All right, but my question is this. Do you feel any kind of palatable kind of pressure from the business community? I mean, do they ever, you know what I mean? Is it like, look, we got one series in last year. We need to make that up. You guys need to get a little further this year. I mean, is that part of the conversation at all with the business community?
Yeah, I think we've been in this like this kind of surreal world, as you guys know. I won't revert to UCLA basketball when you win for decades and win championships, but like in life, you know, I think maybe Boston's been to the playoffs 10 times, you know, like as like the longest streak. We're probably 8 times in the last decade. Like that just doesn't happen. And then we don't shy away from like being a championship level team. So you get bounced out in the first round, that's a disaster. Like that really is, you know, kind of way below your expectations. And by the way, it relates to business right away, because we are like aggressively pricing our product as a premium. You know, it's like we want to fund like the team we have. Our premium, you know, products are big. We want everybody to enjoy like kind of what the district is at like a high level. So you lose, and it's such a different world than other businesses. You fall short, and it's dramatic difference in what your business results are, what expectations are, and then the whole psyche. You know, like, what happens? You know, I always tell people in the business side of this, it's like, oh, you have no, we probably sell 95% of everything sold for an NBA team is probably sold before tip. And then 65% of it is sold like until you stop playing. So the ability to play three more rounds, two more rounds, like you can't imagine like how that compounds financially for you to be able to sell the future. You know, you don't have to make up your value proposition. You are like a championship competitor. People are so engaged in the team. And then, you know, knock on wood, you make it to the finals. You are the only two pro teams in the world like playing for 2 weeks. And that focus is monumental for the returns on the business. You know, whether that's your viewing audience, your sponsors, your ticket buyers, you know, it's just that big. And when you don't make that, it's the opposite. It falls way short.
And let's go the other direction here too. So we talked about the business entities, but the other thing that impresses me about you and the Bucks in particular is the associations that you guys have with so many groups that do wonderful things for the community. When I first got here, it was the Running Rebels and helping them build a new facility, and the Black and Latino Male Achievement Group and Pearls for Teen Girls and Big Brothers. Just talk about that. I mean, the latest thing is our guy Ben Baker has opened up a drug rehab facility that, and all the players were there. The players were there. Everybody was there. Wow. Everybody but me. I should have been there. Anyway, that's a whole other story. But that was a beautiful thing to see, the support that he got. So just talk about how important that is from you personally and your organization.
Yeah, I'd say for me personally, I can't believe it. If you had told Peter Fagan 10 years ago that a big portion of your life would be community work and social activism and kind of caring about other people that weren't my family members or friends, like I would say, like, you're crazy. Like I'm on a build a business, run a bit. And this experience has changed like my personal life and my professional life. And I think it's like also bled into the fabric of who our organization is, you know, in a very big way. So we're this NBA team. We've got like one of the most significant platforms in the world of pro basketball. And we're in this small city. And I think we learned pretty quickly we could affect change. You know, it's kind of like you couldn't even quantify it in some, you know, we registered tens of thousands of people to vote. You know, we inoculated, you know, thousands of people during COVID. Like, you know, we are feeding, you know, tens of thousands of people. Like Brooke Lopez is donating millions of dollars towards literacy and books. And I think like, you know, what we learned in our process is like, how strong the community is and how big a part of our brand and our culture it is. And also what kind of, I mean, we hire people, you know, if they don't want to be a part of volunteering, if they don't want to be a part of the Wisconsin, like kind of Milwaukee community in a way, it's probably not the right people for us, you know, because that's like the type of people we want. So, yeah, I'm kind of blown away. Like Marcus, if you told me that, like, you know, my wife works at MedCalf, like, which is one of the more disadvantaged schools, like in the MPS system, and kind of like our focus is had to chip away at this disparity and kind of like what's going on in our city and other cities. It's a big part of who we are. And by the way, it's like, it kind of all comes from the top, like Wes and Jamie and Jimmy Haslam. They put their money where their mouth is. They put our activities where it is. Like they said, they're going to be citizens, you know, they're going to be neighbors. They're going to be community folks. And like, I think you'd be hard pressed to find anybody specifically in Milwaukee who didn't think like we were one of the examples of like an organization who affects change.
Speaking of change, and we had this big change in the coaching staff, and you want to just talk a little bit about that and everything that went into that without going. We've talked about it kind of enough, but just your feelings about Doc. And I always thought that he was the perfect guy for this situation that he inherited.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, I mean, I would tell you the moment I met Doc and we had not known each other and we sat down, I kind of was like checked like the whole list of everything from leader to smart to direction to strategy to like having like, and you know, like, because you're with the team, like the vibe of what a leader of a veteran team needs, you know, what that equity is and what that, you know, what that voice is, you know, to do it. And miraculously, it's kind of instantaneous. You know, he had to take over a team, you know, past halfway of the season where it was really like, you know, to really start over, you know, and kind of what a, you know, assume you're doing a, you're doing a preseason camp, you know, in January, you know, that's a different type of thing. And I've been really impressed, like all great leaders, like who he surrounds himself with, you know, Dave Yeager and some of the other folks are just like beyond like incredible additions. So yeah, I'm a huge Doc fan. I haven't spent like incredible amount because I don't think the world realizes like we've probably been on the road 75% of the time and haven't had too many practices. And when we're home, you know, they're either, you know, kind of days off or run throughs, you know, in a big way. So he has had no easy journey in getting us up to speed.
Yeah. And I couldn't leave you without asking you just to speak on Giannis and what he has meant to this city and your, you know, what you've watched from him over the last 10 years.
Yeah. You know, I guess the best way to describe that is, you know, I've just, one of the true blessings of our life is like we get to meet these people and we get to like be a part of this, you know, these organizations, which are all about people, you know, to do it. So I tell you, like the other day when he went down and limped into the locker room and I kind of like, I almost felt, you know, like when your kid goes down or when, you know, like I was kind of more worried about him. You know, you almost wish you could take it away from him and absorb it, you know, like the emotion. And I think, you know, you can't make that up in kind of how special he is. You know, he is truly like a light, you know, and I mean that certainly on the basketball court, but like this guy is by example, the hardest worker. This guy is by example, kill for the team, you know, is really focused on winning. Kind of funny, really smart. You know, he is a different guy. And what he's done, I always tell people when we came to Milwaukee, I was like, oh my goodness, like how are we going to build an audience? Like we got to build like Milwaukee, then we got to build like Wisconsin, then we got to build the Midwest, and then we're going to build national, and then we're going to build global. I mean, and there is a Harvard Business School case on the Milwaukee Bucks, which basically tells us, I mean, what this guy did was flip it around and say, like, I think we'll go global and then we'll go down the funnel, like back to Milwaukee to get that down. So, you know, we get this Giannis effect, you know, that ripples through the world of people that are interested. And at the end of the day, he's wearing Milwaukee, you know, kind of across his jersey. And there's no better symbol. There's no better person, you know, you want representing you. Then this guy is kind of the best. So I always think of myself as a sales and marketing guy. And like, you know, one of the challenges is like, if you don't have the product, you're kind of screwed. But us, yeah. I mean, listen, like I tell everybody like, oh, as long as we have Giannis, like we are a championship caliber team, you know, to get that doesn't exist too often. Like that just, this is, people can say stuff like that, but it's not really true. In Giannis's case, it's true.
Okay. So no, and what's interesting is that you talk about fans and Giannis's impact, but just the whole fan experience for the Bucks. Quick story, Peter, the last home game I'm watching, I'm not working, so I'm watching it from home on TV and during a timeout, and they've got this deal where they do the fan engagement where they go left, right, left, right. I see these three cool brothers, Chris, dressed to the nines, just, you know, just real nice outfits, Gucci down and all the stuff. And they're just into it. They're just into it. And I'm like, look at these three cool dudes, but get involved in it. And then we've moved up, Lisa Byington and I, my fantastic partner, from the court side up a little bit. But during, in that little area, I've taken so many pictures. I've engaged with so many fans, and I hate telling you this because I want to get back down on the court, but I know that's not going to happen. But it's really been a blessing for me, man, just to be able to interact with the fans, and they are so appreciative of everything that you guys are doing, just in terms of that whole experience. But I mean, they have really bought in, man. They really bought in, and you got to feel good about that, how they bought in.
What are you gonna say, Chris? Sorry.
I'd love to add, like, when you guys brought us back for my dad's jersey retirement, when you put the jersey up in the rafters, I believe it was that 20, what year was that, Em?
About 3 years ago or so.
Yeah, about three years ago.
21.
I, and, you know, I've, Yeah, and you know, I'm out here in LA, so we're at Crypto, you know, we're at the Staples Center, Clippers, Lakers. When I got to Milwaukee and I got to experience the Fiserv experience with the district, the district and all that, it was like it was amazing. And the job that you guys do, the game in, game out for fan engagement and just making the experience an amazing experience for someone like me. I mean, it's just totally dope.
Yeah, so I'll tell you, I think a big part about that is who we are and where we are, right? Like, we have designed this arena to be accessible. So Crypto, you can't get from here to there. The Garden, you can't get from here to there. You know, it's just not made as the experience to kind of almost welcome people. So there's the environment, number one. Number two, it's kind of the incredible, like, low-key welcomeness of, like, what, like, a Milwaukee is. You know, like, literally, like, our players are accessible, our fans, I mean, Marcus Johnson is accessible, like, you know, to do it in like a good way. So that all like leads up to this place. And I'm so close to it. But you know, when we bring in people, like we have a prospective sponsor. I know if we can get them into Milwaukee, it's over. It's over because like they will naturally be like, I'd take them to your dad in 2 seconds. I'd like walk them back a house. And by the way, it's not manufactured for us. It's like, this is what the experience is. And by the way, this is how fun this can be. Here are who our employees are. You know, so you build that culture. You know, I always like, if I was questioning you guys, I would just question like, you know, it's kind of like the case studies is like what UCLA built and how they could sustain it and what's a wooden like and what's there. You know, it's like if you always look at like what we're trying to do, it's kind of build on like a winning culture, kind of continue to think about constant improvement and kind of do that. And with the focus of like, hey, we're going to win, you know, we're going to play hard, we're going to work hard, but we're going to win. But, you know, all that stuff is so important, but it's like the, you know, the thousands of points that everybody's geared towards, like you come to Fiserv, like as a fan, it's about your experience and you're going to have like a great time.
Well, man, it's been remarkable watching this organization. And how it's evolved and where it's come from in the 9 years I've been here. And Peter, you are the man that is pretty much, you know, riding herd on all this, man. So we appreciate you. We thank you for coming by the Here District, spending a few moments with us. And, you know, let's get them in the playoff. Let's you know, let's go as many rounds as we possibly can this playoff. Yes, sir. So.
Well, I can't thank you guys enough. And by the way, like you are living the fantasy, like being able to do a show with your dad is the coolest, greatest thing like ever. So I love that. So go Bucks and Marcus, you know, I love you. So just stay with us forever.
Right. Appreciate you, brother. All right. Marcus Johnson, Chris Johnson, joined by Peter Fagan. That's all for this episode of the Here District. Hit us up on the Fantastic Voyage. We out of here.